Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Look out, it's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a chili, and I love films. As Anais Nin once said, we write to taste life twice, in the moment and in retrospect. And we watch Vertigo twice, once to experience it, then twice to break down its themes and work it out. It's actually quite a complicated plot. So the first time you're sort of like, what's going on? And then you need to watch it again to go, oh no, really, it's about men and women and sort of sexual desire. It's quite a voyeuristic, quite strange study of sort of human sexuality. And anyway, wow, yeah, that is profound, Anais. That is a classic film for sure. Demands a rewatch, certainly. Thank you. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. But this week, it is the very special, very timely Films of 2021 special with Nish Kumar, Part 2. Find out our top 10s and all sorts of stuff. There's a Patreon to the show at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein where you get extra long episodes, secrets from the guests, and whole episodes uncut and ad-free. You can check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. But this week, I am including the Patreon section in the mains, because why not give you a treat every now and then? Do you know what I mean? Lovely people, you're listening. I appreciate you. So this is it. The second and last part of me and Nish Kumar going over the films of the year 2021. I loved recording it. I love hanging out with Nish. He's fucking brilliant. I love recording these. Wish there were more years that we could do. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 199 of Films to be Buried With. What was your most special experience watching a film this year, the year being 2021, of course?
It's a film that I'm delighted to talk about because I think it's really, really great and I hope more people go and see it, Black Bear. So last year, very kindly, the Glasgow Film Festival invited me to watch another film that I really, really loved, Minari. They were like, we're doing a virtual premiere. Would you like to watch it? I said, absolutely. I love watch Minari. Absolutely loved it. The good thing, and this is a shameless plea to film distributors, if you give me one free thing, I will almost certainly pay you money in something else. So having gone into the kind of online portal, which was really nice, it was nice that film festivals did this, and Glasgow did a great job of like building an online film portal. So it felt like you were participating in a festival while we were all in lockdown. And so I watched the premiere of Minari that was the kind of opening night of the festival screening. And then I sort of scrolled down to the menu of films available and I saw Black Bear, and a huge Aubrey Plaza fan, as every right-thinking person should be. And I watched the trailer and I thought, oh, interesting, seems to be a bit more of a dramatic tone. But, you know, she's still going to be funny in it, and it's this, that and the other. And it seems to be this kind of fraught, almost like a play with three characters in it. And I didn't know anything else about it. It's a difficult film to talk about, and it's a difficult film specifically to talk about with the experience of it. But the sheer thrill of realizing that you have no idea what this film is about to do to you and where the film is about to go, and the turn it takes halfway through, it made me feel so glad and excited. And it made me think, I fucking love movies. fucking love them. And I don't love movies. You know, there are things that films can do, and it isn't just about, you know, a monster eating a building or something. There are things that films can do because they have a strict running time that a television series just can't do. And Black Bear is an example of something that cinema can do, which is completely flip the narrative, the structure, and the content of a film on its head halfway through. There's just a moment, and again, I wouldn't want to give too much away, but there's a moment where I suddenly realised I didn't know what this film was, and I'd been watching it for half an hour. And it's a film about the act of filmmaking and storytelling. And there are times where I find that kind of meta commentary exhausting. But I think the reason that this film works is I think her performance is extraordinary. It's really two performances, and they're both absolutely incredible. And I think it's such a wonderful sort of showcase for her as a performer, particularly because she really is in almost every frame of this film, and she has to do a lot, and she has to make us care about something that could easily have disappeared up its own arse and become essentially an essay about storytelling. But the fact that it is something more visceral, I think, is hugely because of her performance in it. And it just made me think, I just fucking love movies.
You're a clever boy, aren't you? What a clever boy. He's right clever, this one. I think my answer, I had two, but I think the one I'll go with, because it was a very like lovely thing, particularly because most people there hadn't been to the cinema since the pandemic. And it was Brendan Hunt, who plays Coach Beard. It was his partner's birthday. And we were in America's, and there's a place called the Alamo Draft House, which is a particular kind of cinema I'd always read about and always dreamt of going to, where they sort of have tables and service. You get service, which I'm not keen on because I don't want to be interrupted. But anyway, at least it's a nice idea. And, you know, they'd hired this small screening room for the day of West Side Story, when West Side Story came out.
Wow.
And so, I don't know, 40 of us went. And so it was her birthday, so that was nice. We were all together and we watched day one of West Side Story. And what was particularly like, it was lovely all being together and having that experience. And then we all came out like dance, you know, doing impressions of the Jets, the way they walk. And then, but like, what was really funny, kind of funny about it is for some reason, everyone was skeptical about West Side Story. I've forgotten this, but everyone, because the original is a near masterpiece and everyone loves it. And it was like, why is he making this? And then from the opening 10 seconds of the film, you're like, oh, yeah, I've completely forgotten. Steven Spielberg's really good at making films.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, he's one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. And why on earth did we doubt this? It's such a good film, so well made. And the script, I think, is brilliant. I think all the updates they did to the script, Tony Kushner did, are very smart. And it's just brilliant. It's a really, really, really good film. And funny that we ever were worried that Steven Spielberg might not be very good.
100% worried that it wouldn't be very good.
Yeah,
genuinely.
Why did we?
And also, like, I love what Spielberg has done with the Kush. Love the Kush.
Yeah,
love the Kush.
He's good with the Kush.
I love Lincoln. Love Bridge of Spies. Love Munich. Love what and love the fact that he has this relationship with the Kush, where he sort of goes and does, you know, like Ready Player One or something, and then he cut, and then he'd be like, okay, now we get serious.
Come on, Kush. Let's do another series.
I've got a serious idea. come on, Kush. We got a serious one brewing. No. It's not video game shit. We're brewing a serious one, Kush.
I've got another serious one. Right.
Yeah. I can feel a serious one coming. Get ready, Kush. Get the pen out, Kush. Get the pen out, Kush.
Get the heavy pen.
Spielbo's got a serious one on the brew. So I didn't see what the point was of getting Kushner to do. And again, you're like, why would Tony Kushner do? Neither Tony Kushner nor Steven Spielberg needs to do this. As soon as you start watching it, you're like, the updates are so smart. It's great. Because, I love the original. It's incredible. Yeah. It is great that they haven't just popped some boot polish on some Greeks.
Yeah,
it's really lovely. It really does. It really is lovely. It's really nice to see Hispanic performers. Ariana DeBose is great. I really love, I know, you know, so Somewhere, which is like one of my least favourite songs in the show, which I always think is quite boring, having Rita Moreno sing it, I thought was brilliant. It was so, it was just so good. And I also love the fact that Anita is the Joker for ladies. It's the part, it's the part you got to play to win an Oscar. You want an Oscar? Are you a man? Pop yourself in the Joker. Are you a lady? Anita.
Special shout out for Mike Faist, the leader of the Jets, who is fucking brilliant. And I don't know why he wasn't nominated for All Sorts.
Yes. Yeah, he was great. So yeah, good. Really, really good.
And Rachel Ziegler. Rachel Ziegler.
Yeah.
Who is brilliant. And she also, they all should have got awards. Give them all the awards.
Yeah. I hope people watch it. I mean, the only thing that I'd say is, because it's now on Disney Plus, it's very available to people, but it's good watching it in the cinema. The opening shots, you know, the kind of, there's like crane shots and, you know, all of the dance sequences and it's great. It's very good. Steven Spielberg can make films, guys.
Steven Spielberg's quite good. He's quite good at directing films. So keep an eye out for him. I think he's... I'm really excited to see what he's going to do next.
Black Bear and Steven Spielberg.
What's the sexiest film of the year 2021?
Well, Brett, here is something I never thought I would find myself saying. I never thought I would have the word sexy and Wes Anderson. But Let me tell you, French Dispatch, you know.
Very wordy and you're very clever.
Good old Léa Seydoux. She's a very attractive lady. And you know, what do I like, Brett? A mean French lady. Just a mean French lady.
Yeah.
She's very sexy in it. And just a mean French lady. I liked it a lot.
My sexiest film, I believe, is Drive My Car. In the first part of Drive My Car, the husband and wife, there is a scene of a sexual nature in which she tells him a story about being a lamprey. And and sort of is a lamprey on him. And it's very it's a very sexy. And it's very complicated because he knows she's had an affair.
Yeah.
And he hasn't said anything. And she's being, I mean, it's a great scene. That's nothing troubling about that. That's a sexy scene, right? Straight up.
No, that's nothing troubling about that. Yeah, yeah.
She's a lamprey. I didn't know what that was, but then the film tells you. So, and then you see it in action.
I didn't think that was troubling at all.
Lovely. Yeah. Lovely, sexy, lovely film. Now, everyone's favourite category, troubling boners, worrying wide-ons. You're always very good at this. Tell us.
I'll tell you, Brett. I'll be frank with you. Kristen Stewart as Diana. It's a movie. Spencer is a film about a lady being sad.
Yeah, she's very. I don't know what to tell you.
It's a film about sad lady. I don't know what to tell you. Princess Diana was a great beauty in my youth. I was very young. She's a beautiful woman of my youth. That before I really knew that I was attracted to people, she made a real impression on me. And Kristen Stewart as Diana, it all worked for me, and I don't feel good about it. Okay, that's my quote for Spencer. It all worked for me, and I don't feel good about it.
You are very good at this question, but say what you like. Say what you like about Nish Kumar. Yes, he does politics. Yes, he's very clever, but he's very honest about a troubling boner. You can't take that away from him. Well done. That is a troubling boner because there's also absolutely nothing in the film of a sexual nature.
No.
It's mostly a very unhappy woman, very stressed and bulimic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all sorts of problems going on there, Nish. And I'm glad
we
doubled
up the
therapy. The Jeff was troubling boners.
I'm troubling as well.
And you, true to form, did your homework properly to get an A grade. I've got one troubling. It's not a troubling. I've forgotten. This one should have also been in the sexiest because there's nothing troubling about this. And then I'll give you the troubling one. The film Annette. Have you seen Annette?
No, this is the Sparks
musical, Leo Carax. And it has Adam Driver and Marianne Cotillard. And it's fucking brilliant and weird and mad, and I really loved it. And within it, Adam Driver, there's a duet between Adam Driver and Marianne Cotillard where he sings into her vagina whilst holding her breast. Absolutely nothing to tell you about it. He sings, and what he's singing is, "We love each other so much." Lovely. Nothing more romantic than singing into a woman's vagina, "We love each other so much." And for me, that was not only the most romantic moment in film, but also the sexiest. And worth watching. Is that the best bit of the film? No, there's even more to see. I highly recommend Annette.
But if this is what you're offering as a troubling boner, Brett, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm not. Then I would put the entire film Titane or Titane.
Now we're talking.
City.
Now Muhammad Ali is coming up against Joe Frazier, as opposed to Muhammad Ali fighting a literal baby. Now we're talking.
Titane, a French film where a woman has sex with a car, on a car, and through a car, and becomes a car, and sort of gets off with someone that could be her dad, and kills lots of people. The film could also be called Troubling Bonaire with an accent.
Yeah, it is Le Troubling Bonaire. So vraiment une troubling bonaire.
A very troubling bonaire of a film from start to finish. And a very good film.
Very good. And gleeful in its embrace of its troubling bonaire status as well.
It's screaming from the rooftops, troubling bonaire. It's not shy about it.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
It's saying, come on in. And bring loose-fitting trousers.
I think I remember seeing a picture, like an image from the film of her, like, in a bikini, sort of writhing on a car when it was released at Cannes. And I remember clearly seeing that image and going, "No, that's Troubling Bonaire."
Not since Cameron Diaz in The Counselor has someone really gone for it with a car.
That's your double feature. That's Brett's programming season. You should program a series of troubling bonus. You could double program The Counselor and Titane.
What is the greatest film of the year? Maybe not your favourite, but the one you think is the greatest. This is so hard.
For me, Brett, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. For me, it's potentially Drive My Car.
Okay.
I mean, but it's a hard one to pick because, again, we, as always, we're stuck between greatest and favourite, and which one do we distinguish between the two of them? I'll tell you what, I'll save Drive My Car for favourite. I mean, okay. I've just said it now, but for greatest film, I'll say Petite Maman, the Celine Sciamma movie.
Very good choice.
I just thought what an extraordinary film. Couldn't be more different in so many ways from Portrait of a Woman on Fire. Mm-hmm. I just thought that it also 70 minutes. It's only 70 minutes. And so much gets covered in it. And I mean, it's presented through the eyes of a child who thinks that while she's staying, she thinks she's made a friend. There is an element that this friend, it may be a ghost. It may be a memory that's been brought to life. It gets into stuff like, wouldn't we all like to meet our parents as young people to see what they were like and how they became the people that they had wanted to become? So there's a kind of wish fulfillment thing that I think every child goes through at some point in their adolescence. It's a beautiful film about grief. It's a beautiful film about mothers, but it's a beautiful film about kids interacting with each other, and the kids are great, and it's fun watching them muck around with each other. So there's a real like joy and playfulness to it. It also features, I think, probably one of the single heaviest exchanges of dialogue I've ever seen in a film. So for all this like real beauty and this warmth and real lightness to it, there's a point where a child is saying to a mother of their recently died grandmother, she says, the last goodbye wasn't good because I didn't know. And the mother says, she didn't know either. And then the kid says, we can't know. And then the mother says, you're right, we can't know. And I remember watching that in the cinema thinking, well, merci beaucoup, Celine. I'm going to go and think about that for the rest of my fucking life. We can't know. Mm-hmm. Awful, awful stuff. But what a beautiful
the
piece of filmmaking.
The father of lines.
truly, a parent's double bill. The father and petit maman. What a beautiful film, and what a lovely piece of, you know, a ghost story that's also a family drama, and just what a beautiful piece of work.
There's a really, really good thing about it. Like I was thinking as a lesson for writers and directors and stuff, the idea of people being nice to each other. You hear lots of people say, what makes me cry is people being kind to each other rather than tragedy or whatever, you know, sad things. You go, There's just a thing that tells you about
all Spider-Mans. Those are the things. Those are the things that make people cry. People being nice to each other, cruelty, or Spider-Mans.
Yeah. But the opening of the film tells you so much about this kid and she says goodbye to everyone in the care home as she leaves, and then you're on the mum who is driving the car, and there's no dialogue really, I don't think. And this hand keeps coming to frame from the back seat, and the kid is just handing sweets to the mum, like hands are a sweet and then hands are another sweet. And it's such a just good bit of storytelling and tells you about the character. Like, it's kind of funny and it's very, very sweet. And the kid knows that the mum is sad and it's her looking after the mum. It tells you so much in just one shot. It's fucking brilliant. Great. Great.
And it's all from the kid's perspective as well. And so you don't, you sort of lose, you know, the mum kind of disappears because she's going, she's working her own stuff out. Anyway, beautiful. What was your greatest film?
Well, I got three, so I'm going to make one of them my favourite. So let's say the special mention, close, very close, was The Power of the Dog, which I really loved. It's a proper film, felt like a book. Film that felt like a book. like, you know, it felt like a novel. What? Like, well, really developing characters in.
Yeah. I think you saying novelistic is very different from, quotes, it felt like a book.
Yeah, it felt like a book. The Power of the Dog felt like a book, anyway.
Oh, God, everyone's just talking to me. What is this, a book?
It felt like so many words. Really good film. You liked it?
No, I just felt, I felt all of those things as I was watching it, where I was like, good, good stuff.
This is good.
Good stuff. Good stuff. And in that way where you're like sort of secretly not really connecting with the movie.
Yeah, because it's
and then
good.
It ends, and then it ends and you go, fuck, Campion, you little piece of shit.
You've done it again.
Like, it is so good. It is, because it just puts the whole film into a completely different perspective. I saw it without really knowing too much about it again, which I think is a good movie for not knowing a huge amount going in. I thought it was great. Yes, very good film.
It's a very late contender. I saw it very late, and I put off seeing it because, I will say, hand on heart, it sounded boring. It looked boring. I thought, that's going to be a heavy, boring film. And I put off seeing it. I also couldn't quite understand. Anyway, the film is Passing. And I think it's fucking brilliant. And I watched it quite late. And I was like, oh, this is an amazing film. This is an excellent film. And why haven't we been talking about it? It's so stylish. It is directed by Rebecca Hall. It is in black and white. Yeah. It is about two old friends, both black, but one of them is passing for white. And she bumps into her friend, and it is very, what's the word? Ambiguous. There's so much ambiguity going on. There's an awful lot that is unsaid. There is so much to that is about what is not being said. It's about longing. There's a thing that Tessa Thompson does. Again, this is another example of, there was a lot of talk of Ruth Negga in the other role. Yeah. As like, oh, she's amazing. And she is amazing. But I think there wasn't enough talk about Tessa Thompson, who, because she's doing the quiet performance. But what Tessa Thompson is doing for most of the film is watching. We are watching her watch. And she's fucking brilliant. And the film has so many things to say. It says very subtly. It leaves you with a lot to question. It's kind of so much about longing from every angle. It's about longing and belonging and this idea of wanting something to be a way that it isn't and being proud of something else. I think it's really good, and it stayed with me much longer than a film that I really liked when I saw it and haven't thought about since. Passing, I thought about. And that's why I'm like, I think that might be my one. And because it's so kind of small, it's at 90 minutes, I think, but very ambitious and so stylish. And the acting is very stylized. Everything about it is stylized, but not in a way that's shit. It feels like an old film. It's really good.
Great.
Thoughts?
Absolutely agree. Wish that I had seen it in the cinema, I would say.
Of course.
But, you know, which is true of everything, but very beautifully photographed. And it would have been nice to see that on a big screen.
And the music, the music. What a film. Fell in love with the music, listened to it, went for walks, listened to that music. Great film.
Yeah, yeah.
Good film.
Really great Rebecca film. Hall. Well done, Rebecca Hall.
Well, hey, Rebecca Hall, well done. Because that's a really good film. I've called it the greatest. Am I mad? Who knows? We'll find out. So while we're here, we don't like to be negative. I really don't like to be negative. I do have an answer. I guess we'll do it. What's the worst film, 2021? for you?
Let me tell you something. It gives me absolutely no pleasure to say this, and I think it surprised me, but I really did not like the Suicide Squad at all, the new version of Suicide Squad. And that surprised me a lot because I really like James Gunn a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like comic book films. I like the conceit of the Suicide Squad. I just thought that this film, I felt that it was too self-consciously trying to distance itself from superhero movies. It just felt like watching somebody every so often go, does that offend you? Are you shocked by that? This bloke just got eaten by a shark. Does that shock you? I just felt that it was, I felt that the entire enterprise collapsed under the weight of its desire to subvert your expectations of a comic book film at the expense of just doing a film. It's sort of full of charismatic actors, but none of that came through. I thought it was boring, which I think is sort of unforgivable for those films. And maybe also I am just oversaturated with comic book films, and this was the one that tipped me over the edge. So I'm also open to the idea because I know everyone else I know liked this movie.
Yeah,
I wonder whether I've just been overexposed to them. But I just felt that it was trying a little bit too hard to buck the conventions around it, and you know, just somebody just saying "fuck" is not a joke. Like, it reminded me of watching. And doing
very much built a career on that. How rude.
It reminded me. it's charming when you do it. I thought that it was, it reminded me of stand-up sets that I have watched and done as a young comedian, where you sort of forget that actually you have to write jokes, and it's not just enough to go, ooh, pedos.
You got to believe in yourself. This is good stuff. You walking on stage at the Oxford Playhouse and going, ooh, pedos. I guarantee you that's a fucking audience laughing. You don't get it at all. That is funny. Nishku Mosley show.
Ooh, pedos. I mean, listen, I'm perfectly willing to accept that it might just be that I've oversaturated, and I'm very excited for Guardians of the Galaxy 3. I like James Gunn a lot. I think that this one, I just think that maybe everybody just needs to just take a chill pill and maybe just ease up on the old comic book films.
It was fun. And I do love James Gunn, and he likes violence a lot more than I like violence. But at least when I watch his violence, I go, well, you're taking so much joy in this. Fair enough.
You clearly
really are having fun. And it does translate even to someone who doesn't like seeing people be hurt. It's like, well, you're having a lot of fun here.
Yeah.
So there's always joy in his films in whatever form.
Yeah.
My worst film, I hate to say this, I love everyone involved, blah, blah, blah. And this is me. It's House of Gucci, which was one of the hardest films to get through.
Abretta, how can you ever say that this was a bad film?
I didn't understand.
the accent. I didn't understand a word of the...
I was like, what? Listen, here's the thing. This is why it's odd that this should be my worst film. I love weird, mad films. I love a film that is weird and mad. And House of Gucci is definitely weird and mad. But it's also fucking boring, and that to make a film that weird and mad that is boring is sort of something's gone wrong, because it should just be like, wow, I don't know what anyone is doing or what this is, you know, what the tone of this is. I don't get it. I don't get the characters. The characters change. You know, Adam Driver suddenly is a completely different character 40 minutes in. I don't understand anything that is happening, and everyone's being very weird, and it feels like, I believe the word is camp, but I've never fully understood the way I use it, but as in it kind of feels deliberately bad, like there's something like
is it
camp, like it's sort of shit, it's kind
like it's deliberately trashy.
Like
you can easily conceive of a version of that film that is great and was directed by John Waters.
Yes, exactly. So it's got that, but then it's also goes on forever. I guess if I'd known what the ending was, like that's where it was heading to, maybe that would have helped, because I would have been like, oh, when's that thing going to happen? Because I didn't know anything about it, I was just like, fucking hell, now I'm watching, now she's joining up with this fucking guy. And I thought, I shouldn't say this, I won't say who or what. There's two characters in it that I thought were played by the same actor. And one of them was a boy and one of them was a girl. And I thought, someone's in prosthetics playing this other character.
What, did you think it was like the clumps?
Yeah, which perked me up for a bit. I was like, oh, okay, this has gone really mad. And then I found out that it was actually just a different actor. But I also was like, maybe if you're into fashion and I don't know, maybe they're, that's why I don't want to say I'm in the wrong here. I didn't get it, but I was also bored not getting it. Sometimes I don't mind not getting it if I'm like, that was just wild. But this was like, fucking hell, 2.5 hours. Get on with it. I don't know what's going on.
I think you have to, I think it's fine to put all the caveats in, but I definitely think if there's a point where especially someone who watches films in as close a detail as you thinks two characters are being played by the same actor, like Eddie Murphy and the Nutty Professor, that is a failure of the filmmaking.
I really thought, oh, okay, so that's the twist, like it's their brother and sister. But they were two different, completely different actors.
You're watching it, hoping for a Norbit, and being disappointed when you don't get one.
What's the funniest film of the year?
I think that there are sort of probably two answers to that question. I think in terms of the film that made me laugh the most, it would probably be Bar and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, which is, I have subsequently discovered, somewhat of a divisive film conversation. I'm collecting the anecdotes conversationally, but I thought it was I could watch Annie Mumlow and Kristen Wiig do that for hours and hours and hours. Reba McEntire turns up as a mermaid. Jamie Dornan singing a song. Jamie Dornan's fucking great in it. It's just the opening sequence with that little kid doing his paper round is, it's just, it reminded me of, even though this one, in spite of Kristen Wiig's background, was not based on an SNL sketch, it reminded me of something like a Wayne's World where it's a sort of character beat that's been pulled out and done for 2 hours. And I was absolutely delighted by it. I think probably the best comedy film of the year is probably Palm Springs. I think that was probably, I thought that was a really, you know, again, it's like, how do you spin a ground? It is funny to me that Groundhog Day is now a genre of film.
Yeah.
Like, it is really interesting that, you know, because there's the Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You, which I'm a huge fan of both of those movies. It's very fun that Groundhog Day, a film, has now just become a genre of movie. And we do just call it a Groundhog Day. You know, it's like, it's a Groundhog Day. But I thought that in the context of that, I thought it was spun out very nicely. I think Christina Milotti is great. I think Andy Samberg is absolutely brilliant.
He's great.
I just think he's great. And I just think, I really hope people sort of did get into this movie. I believe it seemed like a lot of people watched it, and especially because it came out here during another lockdown, that idea of the grinding repetition of waking up in the same place, like it felt like it had an extra resonance for people. But I do think it's really good.
I love Palm Springs, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I would have if you hadn't. I think it's fucking brilliant. I want to give a special shout out to Free Guy.
Yeah, but so is that your answer? Is Free Guy
the
answer?
No, that is not my answer. My funniest film, which is really surprising, didn't expect it to be as funny as it is Riders of Justice, which is a Danish film with Mads Mikkelsen. And it's fucking funny. It's really, really funny. Laughs per minute. That's the film.
Yeah.
And it's deep and it's serious and it's everything. And it's definitely worth seeing. It's a very interesting film, but proper, proper funny. And maybe funny because you're not expecting it to be such a comedy, because it is a drama. But, you know, big laughs in that one. Watch it.
It's the opposite of Another Round. Like the other great Mads Mikkelsen movie of the year.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's a comedy premise. I think the great thing about that movie is I would love to like just read the get the beat sheet, the scene by scene, because I think it perfectly mirrors the arc of a heavy night out. because it starts out really fun, really exciting. It gets more fun, really exciting. And then slowly it just gets darker and darker.
Yes, it's true.
That film is the perfect experience of a night of heavy drinking.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school?
I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity, so I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term programme. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Drinking.
All right, let's do a Patreon section. Fuck it. Here we go. Do, 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 do. Welcome to the Patreon section. Oh, you again. Come on in.
Thanks for the extra money, Patreon.
Tell us a secret. Tell us a fucking secret. Oh, it's quite scary in the Patreon.
It's quite scary, the Patreon. I mean, listen, my secret, which I don't think I've even told you, is that I woke up in the middle of the night to see if you'd won an Emmy. Genuinely true. I, like, got up with a star.
On that specific night?
On that specific night, yeah, yeah. Every night. On that specific night, I had gone to sleep and my body woke me up with a star and was like, have a little look. And I had a little look and he'd won an Emmy and it was great. And it was absolutely great. And I do not regret it in the interrupted night's sleep in any way, shape or form.
Your body was like, something, I'm tingling.
Yeah. I think it was because I was really thinking about it before I went to bed. Like, I was really being like, God, Brett could win an Emmy tonight. And
you're very sweet. And that's why I've had to murder you.
And so I think that's why my brain popped up. I mean, take from this what you will, but I also had the very similar emotional experience around Paul Thomas Anderson winning Best Original Screenplay, because I thought that was going to happen. So my body also woke me up. Fortunately, it woke me up just after Will Smith slapped Chris Rock, so I did get to see the fallout of that in the room.
Oh, you saw that live?
Yeah, anyway. No, I woke up literally after it happened.
And you were like, why is everyone being so shifty?
Yeah, why is everyone? Why is
the atmosphere here really bad?
Do you know what I mean? If you've been to enough gigs where at points you are the cause of said atmosphere, even on the telly, you could go, something's really off here.
Yeah, you really could. You know, what is, here we go. Some good ones here I've got. What about you? What's the best
got some good ones.
Opening to a film this year?
Three words, Brett. Three words. Mm-hmm. Drive my car, because the opening of Drive My Car is a whole film that happens for 40 minutes.
You're talking.
Yeah, that happens for 40 minutes, and then the opening credits appear. And I watched it in a completely, I think, almost sold out screening at the Prince Charles. And people laughed at the sheer audacity of having the credits appear at 40 minutes. And I thought it was just absolutely brilliant. Just great. What's your best opening?
My best opening, I've realised that nearly, I think all of my answers to these are musical based. My best opening is Annette. Annette starts similar to the film Jesus Christ Superstar, in a way. I was just realising that Annette starts with, it goes, may we start? May we start? And you're in a studio, in a music studio, and he goes, so may we start? And then this song begins, and the song pretty much repeats the lyric, may we start, may we start? And then the actors from the film appear, and then it's all sort of done in one take, and then the camera comes out into the street, and then the cast and crew of Annette appear, and that may we start, may we start? where we start the film and the lyrics are sort of very aware and they go, you know, we're nervous and we haven't got enough budget, but where we start and it's building and building and building. And then Adam Driver gets on his motorbike, like, bye to his friends in the car. It's like, I'm off to start the film. And he goes off.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's fucking great.
That's love great. It.
That's a good idea. Best set piece in a film. Not the beginning or the ending, somewhere in the middle.
What are you going to go for?
Can I have two? I think a bit.
Yes.
One is the I Am a Revolutionary scene from Judas and the Black Messiah.
Oh, you know what? Yeah. And I'm a classic film that came out very early in the year in the UK got left off a lot of best of the year list.
Yeah.
Fucking great movie. And that speech.
Yeah. And I heard a story of like Daniel Kaluuya doing that in when they went to get financing for the film, I believe. And he that in the room and they went, take all our money.
Like,
he is fucking brilliant. And that scene is like, you are completely swept up in it. You as audience are like, yes, I am. Yeah. I want in. Like, it's fucking brilliant.
Yeah. It's that thing where like, it's the hardest thing when, you know, when you're watching something, happen, that's supposed to be people reacting to either phenomenal charisma or even singing talent, anything like that. It's such a difficult thing because you're supposed to, you know, you're completely reliant on the performer in that moment. You know, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing even, like, you can definitely enhance it with the filmmaking, but there is something about, you can't fake that level of charisma. It's incredible. And he's, you know, Fred Hampton is like, he died at 23, I think. You know, he's this prodigious talent who was so smart and so driven and had so many important, significant ideas about race and economics, but was also this incredible communicator. And I mean, it's that scene is woof.
What is my other favorite set piece is last night in Soho, the sequence when she goes to sleep for the first time and is taken back in time, and it all happens in one shot. And there is a dance that happens where within the camera, special effects wise, no special effects as in it all happened live, the actors switch as they're spun around on the dance floor, they switch in and out. And it reminded me of seeing Our House, my favourite show, with the way they did quick changes with casting that. I love that sort of thing. And it's so thrilling, that whole sequence of her going back in time on this long, long Steadicam.
And there's that nice shot of her walking down the... down the stairs, and it's the girl in the reflection.
Yeah. As a set piece, just that sequence alone, I was like, that is the best thing Edgar Wright's done. I think that piece is fucking brilliant. You could watch it 100 times and still... And I've watched the thing where he explains how they did it, and I still don't... It's like watching Penn and Teller, because you're like, yeah, you say all that, but how the fuck did you do that? You know what I mean? It's really good. And also, I think there's something magical about you're watching something live, basically, because the camera person is having to be part of this dance. The actors, everyone has to do their bit at exactly the right moment. Everything has to be perfect for a shot like that to work. And so there's something thrilling about it. You experience that. That's something that's hard to capture. The thrill of live performance. You sort of get a feel for it in that shot, I think. Maybe that's what makes it so exciting.
Yeah.
What's your best set piece?
Well, if it sort of feels cheap to call this a set piece in a way, but it's the bit in Summer of Soul.
Yeah,
it feels weird to call it a set piece, but it's when Mahalia Jackson invites Mavis Staples on stage to sing Martin Luther King's favourite hymn, to sing the hymn that Martin Luther King and Jesse Jackson comes out and tells the story of Dr. King suggesting that they play Precious Lord, Take My Hand the moment before he is shot dead. And so like that, you know, that's enough. Like that, like already, this is the most extraordinary piece of footage you've ever seen.
Yeah.
But then Mahalia Jackson comes on stage and then you hear Mavis Staples talk about how she idolized Mahalia Jackson. And then Mahalia Jackson says that she's not feeling, and you can see her sort of talking to Mavis Staples on stage, but you're hearing all of this in Mavis Staples' recounting of it. So there's that double thrill of watching it and having somebody reflect on it and their emotional state as it's happening. You know, like everybody's, because Jesse Jackson has just described Martin Luther King's death. He uses the phrase, a bullet had severed his spine. You know, it's so visceral. And then Mahalia Jackson says that she just isn't feeling up to it. It's this feels like it might also be this kind of passing of the torch moment. And it's lovely because Mavis Staples, it's her hero, is asking her to come and perform. So it's all so loaded. And then Mavis Staples and Mahalia Jackson singing Precious Lord, Take My Hand is I couldn't believe what I was watching. I just couldn't believe what I was watching. One of the most fortunate things in a fairly, I think we would say, incredibly fortunate life is I saw Mavis Staples sing live. Saw her do The Wait live in a television studio. And her voice is just, it just cuts right through you. And the film catches that incredibly. And so just as the performance that Mahalia Jackson and Mavis Staples do is extraordinary enough, but the circumstances and the preamble by Jesse Jackson is, I mean, it's the most extraordinary thing I saw in any film last year.
Excellent answer. Excellent. Every bit of that film is just like, oh, yes, please.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. The answer to that question could have been about five sequences from Summer of Soul. Because I also think the bit when you see Stevie Wonder, he's sort of playing his old stuff, but he's plugged the wah-wah pedal into the electric keyboard, into the electric piano, and you go, oh, he's discovered the sound of Superstition. He doesn't know it yet. Like, you're watching somebody, you very rarely get to see a talent in mid-step. Like, you either see you either have the footage of the early stage or you have the complete thing. And what you're watching is Stevie Wonder, like, about to discover Talking Book, Songs in the Key of Life. You're seeing somebody as they're stepping into a whole different phase of their creativity. You know, that whole movie's unbelievable.
It is very good. What is the best ending, closing sequence to a film in 2021?
It had to be Power of the Dog for me, just because, again, I watched it, felt that I was watching a very well-made thing, felt the acting was lovely, felt that it was really all well-mounted, but wasn't necessarily hitting me on a visceral level. Then the film ends, you realise you've watched a completely different film. It completely hoodwinked me, and I just thought it was extraordinary. I just, you know, I thought it was great. And you know what? Really brilliant ending. The first line of the film tells you how the film is going to end. Mm-hmm. And I somehow missed it. And it played a trick on me. Great to see Cumbers doing some full... Because, I mean, he's done Sherlock, Magic Sherlock, Racist Sherlock. He's, you know, do you know what I mean? Like
Racist Sherlock. Who's Racist Sherlock?
Dominic Cummings. I think we probably have to whack an allegedly on there.
Oh, okay.
let me rephrase this. We've seen Cumbers do Sherlock. We've seen him do Doctor Strange, Magic Sherlock. We've seen him do Dominic Cummings, Brexit Sherlock. We've seen him do, even his Alan Turing is computer Sherlock. But like, when you...
Power and, of the Dog, I saw the Courier, Spy Sherlock.
Spy Sherlock. But Power of the Dog, that dude
Cowboy
is...
Cowboy Sherlock.
I mean, really good. But it was great because he didn't... All of his Sherlock-y, Sherlock-isms were all turned off.
He's very good, isn't it?
I mean, man, that's a hell of a performance. But they're all, you know, Kirsten Dunst, Jesse Plemons, Cody Smith-McPhee, they're all extraordinary. But yeah, the ending just completely changes the complexion of the movie, and Cumberbatch is fucking incredible. Hmm. What's your best ending?
My best ending is Another Round. Another Round.
Oh, yes.
Another Round.
Yes.
And again, it's a musical one. It makes you think, perhaps I just like things with songs in. But it is... It's like a book with songs, but the end of Another Round. Another Round is such an interesting film because if you don't know what it's about a group of middle-aged men sort of having a midlife crisis who decide to do an experiment to be a little bit drunk all the time.
Mm.
And it is like a sort of high-concept comedy. You can see a sort of Will Ferrell version of that film that's really wild and wacky. And,
yeah.
And it's actually quite subdued and melancholy. And what is odd about it is it's also fairly ambiguous. Like it also you would assume it's an anti-alcohol film. And it isn't really, it sort of kind of goes, yeah and no. It doesn't really come down either way. And then this end, which is Mads Mikkelsen dancing at a graduation, as sort of around some kids who are graduating and just kind of drinking again and having an amazing dance.
Yeah.
And then jumping in the sea. Oh, it's fucking great. And it's all...
Yeah.
What does it mean? What does any of it mean? There's a very sad... I'm sure you know this, but the director's daughter very sadly died like 3 days into filming that film. And they, you know, they stopped filming for a good few months and then came back together to do it. And I think maybe this is just reading stuff into it, but that sense of kind of sadness and melancholy is all over the film. And I don't know if the film would have been the same had that not happened. Maybe the original was much more raucous, and I don't know. I really don't know. That's all guesswork in it, but it's quite a lovely, odd film another round. And that ending is great. Yeah.
But it's sort of like all of our relationship with, if you're not teetotal, it sort of is your relationship with alcohol, really, is that if you're neither teetotal nor an alcoholic, your relationship with alcohol is you sort of just keep doing it. And as you get older and older, you realise it's a bad thing, but you still keep doing it. You know, like that's that. And you watch it, you sort of, if you're fortunate enough not to have addiction problems yourself, you just won't avoid seeing firsthand how it destroys. And it does, you know, it does consume one of the characters in the film. And it does kill him in the end. But Mads Mikkelsen at the end is back drinking. And it's difficult because it just is a lot of us than the way that we've lived.
Well done, soldier. Do you want to do your top 10? Why don't you do your top 10? Should you do your top 10?
Yeah, I've got my top 10.
Can we have 11?
Yeah, go for it.
You go first.
Okay.
I'll try and make it 10, but it depends on what your 10 are.
Well, okay, I'll do 10. And then if you feel that we have to have a bonus 11th, okay, I will also add a bonus 11. So my top 10, number 10, Spider-Man No Way Home.
Lovely.
Number 9, Summer of Soul. Perfect. Number 8, Black Bear. Number 7, The Father. No, number 6, Power of the Dog.
Yes, please.
Number 5, Judas and the Black Messiah.
You can have it.
Number
4, it.
Number 4, Minari.
Yep.
Number 3, Petit Maman. Lovely. Number 2, Come On, Come On. And number 1, Drive My Car.
Fascinating list. Do you think it's interesting we haven't talked about it? Why is Nomadland not on that list?
I am very interested in having this conversation, 100%. It is very interesting that Nomadland isn't. And I do think Nomadland is a good movie. It's very interesting because also we haven't actually ended up talking about the last two Best Picture winners, and they were both 2021 releases.
So
Nomadland and Coda. So Coda, which won the 2022 Best Picture Oscar, was also a 2021 release. The thing that I would say about Coda is it's very well performed. It sort of feels like a film from the 1990s, you know, in the way that it feels like it has story beats from a kind of 1990s movie. And it reminded me of, it structurally is quite similar to Bend It Like Beckham. And it, I thought that as with a lot of that movie, I wanted to stay with the deaf performers because I thought they were the really interesting thing in that film. And actually when she's singing in the school, you're like, oh, get out, I can't be bothered with this. You know, like the mum and dad, and the dynamic between her and the mum and dad is the interesting thing in that movie. And every time we pull away from it, we're back in quite a boring 90s high school movie. But with Nomadland, I mean, I thought it was really good. I thought Nomadland was really good. But it, for whatever reason, and maybe it's suffered from the fact that, because it's so beautifully photographed, maybe it suffered from the fact that I didn't see it in the cinema. And that's maybe why it hadn't stayed with me in the same way. But I did think it was a really good movie. It was just a very strong year for films.
Yeah, I'm gonna put Nomadland. I think Nomadland is great. Again, it's a film that isn't quite the film I expected it to be. As in, I sort of thought it'd be more depressing than it is, and it's actually lovely again, and has sort of quite.
And she's just got a very mischievous on screen presence.
Yeah,
you know, like this. So it. And it does stop it from becoming just a sort of, it could be quite one note and quite miserable, but it would definitely be my 11th movie. And it does just, I do think that it, I do think that it isn't as miserable as it could have been, because I think Frances McDormand really just has this kind of very cheeky energy.
This is a nightmare, isn't it? Looking at my list, I wanted Minari on it and I don't have it, but yeah. You've at least had Minari, so at least we've acknowledged.
Yeah.
We all like Minari, all right? Minari's very good.
Really great. Great kid. Another great kid performance.
Great kid.
You don't act like a real grandma. Lovely.
I really like that film. And you know what else I really like in that film? I liked, and I don't know how they did it, seeing the farm grow over the course of the film. The actual sort of mechanics of the farm.
Yeah.
I like all that stuff. Like a bit of
physics. And when you talk about a really, really amazing analogy, like the idea of the Minari, the weed that you can sort of plant anywhere and it'll grow as a kind of metaphor for immigrant communities is really beautiful and really, really lovely.
Yeah, I'm putting that back in now. Okay. Oh, then I've lost Nomadland. Look, I really like Nomadland. I think it's great. All right. I'm sorry it's not on the
list. We'd love Nomadland. We love Nomadland. Right.
We love Nomadland. I don't know why we're making such a thing of it. We love Nomadland. It's just there are other films we also love. All right. I'm not sure about this order. All right. At 11, Minari. At 10, Annette. At 9, Summer of Soul. Oh, am I sure about this? Have I missed something? Hang on. What? How many have I done? 4.
Next. You've done 11, 9, 10.
11, 9, 10. At 8, am I on 8?
Yeah.
Pig.
Yeah.
At 7, The Lost Daughter, which we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that, shall we? At 6, Petit Maman. At 5, beautiful. West Side Story. At 4, Power of the Dog. At 3, Judas and the Black Messiah. At 2, Promising Young Woman. And at 1, Passing. Oof, difficult decisions. I'm not even sure about any of them anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure we've had a year. I guess it's testament to how many good movies came out in 2021. Yeah. But I'm not sure we've had a year where our number one films weren't in each other's list at all.
The Lost Daughter. Let's briefly talk about it. You seen it?
No. Tell me about it.
Well, another, similar to Tessa Thompson in Passing, another great bit of a character watching. So much of the film is Olivia Colman watching this other family. And why the Lost Daughter, one of the reasons Lost Daughter is great is because you don't see characters like this in films. She's a very tricky, unlikable, difficult character. And there's a moment in it that maybe would be in my horror. That is so shocking, and it's such a small kind of social thing that I was just like, oh my God, this is the most disturbing thing. Where Olivia Colman's on a sun lounger, she's on holiday, and this family turn up, this quite noisy family. She's sort of on her own on this beach. This noisy family turn up on their holiday, and they're like setting up deck chairs, and they're having, it's clearly a birthday. And one of them comes over to Olivia Colman and says, would you mind, we're all together, would it be possible for you to move to that deck, you know, that deck chair, then we can all be together. And Olivia Colman says, no, I don't want to move. And it's so, like, you're like, oh my God, what are you doing? Just move. And the person goes, oh, you know, it's just because we're all together, it'd be, she goes, I don't want to move. And it's so tense. And you're like, just fucking move. Oh my God. Why are you fighting this? That's the most stressful scene in cinema history.
It's a British nightmare.
Yeah, it's a British nightmare. Just get off the fucking sun lounger. Anyway, that's a very interesting film. And again, I would compare it weirdly to like Uncut Gems, where you're, I haven't seen a film with these sort of characters in, you know what I mean? Like, even if you're not like on board, on side with them, you go, these people are in the world and we don't see them. And it's a very interesting film and good. I like it. Anyway, anything else we haven't discussed?
I feel very strongly about, I actually rewatched Drive My Car to make sure that it was number one. It's number one, baby. It did a lot of stuff to me, that movie. Like, it, for whatever reason, it did a thing that I really like, that I think we talked about a few years ago, whenever we talked about Portrait of a Woman on Fire, the idea of, like, reclaiming high art from being something really boring. Because, like, I studied Chekhov at university, and I was bored as hell by it. And the first thing that I thought when I came out of this movie is, I've got to read some Chekhov, because that... That guy knew some shit. But I just found I found the restraint in all of the characters incredibly moving. I thought there's a sequence where there's a mute character in the film who he casts in his play. And there's a scene where they just go and have a nice dinner at her and her husband's house. And and the girl who is driving him around, you know, he doesn't want to be driven. She's driving him around. He's grieving his lost wife who dies in the first 40-minute short film that starts the film. And she's just playing with a dog. And it's just a really nice, sweet scene in the middle of the film. But what I felt was incredibly depressing film. There is something very hopeful and beautiful about the ending of that movie. And the idea that you could sort of love somebody even though you didn't really know parts of their character, and that sometimes you have to forgive yourself for doing things that you did to survive a particular situation. And then that kind of last monologue that precedes the coda of the movie, you know, the final monologue of his kind of rewritten version of Uncle Vanya, I just think is one of the most moving things I've ever seen in a film. And it's delivered by the mute character in sign language. And that,
amazing.
I thought it was just a showstopper of a moment. And this idea, this line, the line where she says, "We'll live through the long, long days." I just think that there was something so beautiful and optimistic, but realistic optimism, you know, an optimism that understands that things are going to happen. People are going to let you down. You're going to let people down. There are moments that you're not going to be able to reason with the things that have happened to you and to people around you. But, you know, it's just an unlikely moment of union between two very different films, because ultimately the message of Drive My Car and the message of Come On, Come On is whatever happens, sometimes you do just have to come on, come on and live through the long, long days. And I think there's something so really, really beautiful about a film that is about such messy and complicated characters who choose optimism. And the way that it's expressed is so beautifully cinematic, and you know, in complete silence, you're just watching sign language. I just thought it was extraordinary. It just absolutely floored me. It was just a sort of gut punch of a film at the end. You know, to choose to be hopeful feels like something so radical after what the characters have been put through in that movie.
Very good. You're very good. You're very good. I mean, it's why you keep coming back. Keep coming back. It works if you work it. What is your favourite film?
Has to be Drive My Car. What's your favourite film?
I fucking don't know anymore. I think it's Promising Young Woman, but I like all the films that we've talked about. So let's take Promising Young Woman.
You know, I get the sort of... I understand that there are like real concerns and stuff going straight to streaming and, you know, non-franchise or non-action movies, you know, being... I understand there are very legitimate reasons to be concerned about the future of cinema. But like, definitely when you look at the films that came out in 2021, you're like, oh, the quality of the films is definitely not the issue here. Yeah, you know, like the quality and variety of films being made. Yeah, it's distribution and it's getting people to see them. But like, people are making such like cool and interesting and varied stuff.
Nish Kumar, you've been wonderful as always. Now, when you complimented me on winning an award and I choked you to death with my bare hands, and then I just fucking choked you until you died because I couldn't take it. And then I was stood right there and I had a coffin with me, you know, I was like, oh, I've just killed Nish. I sort of came out of the fog. Why did I kill? I love Nish. Why did I do it? And I remembered, oh, yeah, he tried to say something nice to me. I don't regret it. And I stuff you in the coffin that I had with me anyway. I mean, that should have been a warning, so I don't start trying to say something nice to me. I'm carrying a coffin. Put you in, smash you all in there. And there's more than I was expecting. I don't know why, because I hadn't seen you in a while and you were wearing your Whacking Phoenix in Come On, Come On full body suit. And, there's only enough room for me to put one DVD in the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show everyone when they say, Nish, show us a film from 2021, please?
It's for me, it's so hard because it could be certainly it could easily be any of the top three that I pick: Petite Maman, Come On, Come On, or Drive My Car. I will say just today how I'm feeling, and it's possibly because I've seen it again most recently, but I will say Drive My Car.
Okay. I would take Summer of Soul because I know how to show people a good time. But yeah, sure. Also,
what's really funny about that speech is that the premise of that speech is life is really hard, but then you get to heaven and you understand that the suffering was all worth it and you feel okay about it. But then if you get to heaven and I'm making you watch fucking Drive My Car again, you might think, Jesus, it wasn't worth living through the long, long days.
Nish Kumar, what a pleasure and a joy. We've done over 2 hours. Will this be a two-parter? Probably. Well done.
Listen, if you fancy coming to see me on tour, the tickets are at nishkumar.co.uk. If you live in New York, there are tickets available for the shows on the 19th, 20th, 21st and 23rd.
Anything else?
New York City, baby. No, apart from that, no.
Nish, I love you. Thank you for your time.
I love you, Brett.
And I will see you tomorrow or the next day.
It's weird. Well, it's nearly time for us to record the best of 2022.
I don't want to call it. It's too early to call it, but I've already called it. It's Mass. But it's so early. It's May. Come on.
So
we've
early.
Got a year and well, a half it's to nice think about
to put,
this.
It's nice to put this. Yeah, it's nice to put this timestamp down, yeah. And we can see. And we can see where we wind up.
All right. Well done. Good day to you.
We'll live through the long, long days
forever. Good day to you, sir. Bye. So that was episode 199. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra chat, secrets, and videos. Don't forget to get your tickets for the live show at the Hackney Empire July 2nd. Tickets at hackneyempire.co.uk or plosive.co.uk. Thank you so much to Nish for giving me his time. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for episode 200. What are we going to do? We've made it to 200. What are we going to do? I've got a plan, but I'm not going to tell you it. I guess you'll have to tune in then. Thank you all for listening. I really hope you're well. And, you know, that's it for now. But in the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Brett.
Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant.
Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.